Lord Bacon, in his Wisdom of the Ancients, interpreted a great many of the Greek myths in terms of psychopolitical statements of principles of universal procedure. He did not, however, include in his group the myth of Dionysus, and that is the one we'd like to think about for just a few minutes as a prologue to the present problem. According to the old legends and myths, Dionysus was the beloved son of Zeus, father of heaven. He was born of a mortal woman and became a deity. Actually, Zeus was a doting father. He was really given to spoiling his only son, whom he loved devoutly and dearly. And to keep the little fellow happy when he was quite small, his father presented him with every kind of a toy that could be conceived of. He gave him all kinds of things. Of course, he didn't have to give him a spacesuit. He had that already. But he did have, video games or their equivalents. He had building blocks, alphabets, numbers, all kinds of things, puzzles to solve. And he was really surrounded by every type of challenge that Zeus could bestow. And Zeus stood by and watched the little one enjoying all of this, you might say, educational amusement. But one day, in the course of time, the little Dionysus, wandering around in his father's home in Olympus, wandered too close to the edge. And there appear upon the scene 12 Titans, giants, very unpleasant characters, who found it a wonderful opportunity to steal away the little boy. So, when Zeus was concerned with managing the universe, the Titans kidnapped the little Dionysus and killed him. Now, this became the basis of a very great and lengthy fable, which was carried on through into the initiation rites of the Bacchic mysteries and became the peculiar property of the Dionysian artificers, the great system of ancient architectural engineering. Now let's think for just for a moment to see what this might all mean in terms of our present way of life. Actually, we are all, in a sense, like the little Dionysus. We have all been given a vast number of toys in the course of our evolution. We have been given almost everything conceivable to educate and amuse us. We have been given all kinds of studies. We have been given all kinds of animals to be friendly with. We have found a world of beauty and of peace and of happiness, where everything was unusual, everything was interesting, and the human being had very largely the control of this wonderful sphere of entertainment and amusement. But something went wrong. And the thing that went wrong, apparently, was that the Titans got mixed up in the picture. And as the little boy wandering in the heavenly worlds came too close, the primordial elements took hold of him and dragged him down into mortality. Therefore, we find in the legend that all of the good things that were given to us have been spoiled by degradation, by being profaned, by being turned over to the keeping and the tender mercy of chaos. And today, chaos is a word we're all beginning to be afraid of, more perhaps than we ever were in the time of the Greek legends. The truth of the matter is that, as most sacred books tell us, this world was a very pleasant place the way it was intended to be. It was created with a mysterious but wonderful power of self-replenishment. It could go on and on and on. It was a self-sustaining, self-complete mass in space. It had everything we needed. everything that we really should learn to enjoy. It was full of opportunities, not only for improvement, but for play, for joy, for friendliness, and for entertaining our unfolding minds. The world around us is a mass of educational toys. Now, we may say that toy might not be an appropriate word for these different things, but from the standpoint of the divine power, a toy is appropriate, inasmuch as all these things that we see and have are physical. We have been given the multiplication table, and we can have fun with that forever. We have been given the alphabet, not in the form of little blocks, but in the form of an infinite expanse of living procedures in nature, providing us with a basic form of communication. We have languages. We have all these things which are the toys of the gods. They are the powers which divinity can scatter at will over the vast space of the created universe. Somewhere along the way, however, these things cease to be toys. And to follow Bacon's psychopolitical thinking, these things became the subjects of envy, jealousy, cupidity, and burglary. Each person now wanted other people's toys. And instead of enjoying these things, which all have free regardless, human ingenuity began to find ways to take the freedom away from them. Instead of all these things being available to the creation, they were locked up in little segments, and people were made proprietors over them. And in a short time, it was necessary to make a great effort to get at these supplies that nature gave us. For everything we see, everything we know in the material universe is like the air and the water. It belongs to all things. But in the course of time, we have asserted proprietorship over these things. And when somebody wanted somebody else's toys, they didn't hesitate for a moment to steal them. And if the individual didn't like the idea of having them stolen, it was all right to kill him and take them anyway. So gradually, the universe, as it was intended to be, the universe of a tremendous school with a great playground, gradually descended into the confusion and complexity that we know today. And most of the fun, joy, and even the enlightenment has been taken out of these various possessions. We no longer really study to find out what these things mean that have been given to us. We take them for granted, use them as we please, and abuse them if we want to, and then wonder why things do not go well. So in this idea, we are at the present time suffering from a lot of broken toys. Toys that we've broken with our own callousness, with our own selfishness, with our own avarice. Toys that we have thrown away when they were perfectly good and could have been used for a much longer time. Everything that has come down to us is no longer regarded as a gift of divinity. It is attributed now to some corporation that manufactures them. It never has been revived in the human mind that the essential things that we have never did belong to us, never belonged to any person, but were the gifts of a divine power that expected them to be used wisely. Little by little, therefore, our toys became more expensive, and various manufacturers made them poorly, and fashions changed so rapidly, and the whole idea of what should have been a great educational spectacle for human good simply settled down to a good, solid business, economic, industrial foundation. Now, this is only one side of the problem, because in the processes of living with a civilization that no longer cares for value, we find a great many people desperately hurt. We all naturally, I think, like to be constructive. We all want to do nice things. We all want to have constructive beliefs. We all want something to care for, something to love, something to hope for and things to build on. We are that kind of a creature. And gradually this intensification that is taking place around us has swept away all of these values. One by one, every ideal that we have has been perverted and corrupted. And therefore, we may say that human hopes, human ideals, human dreams, man's great desire to do nice things, his vision of better times and better conditions, have all been betrayed. And he finds that he is actually almost alone, very unhappy, deprived of every natural pleasure that he normally could use. And he is like the little Dionysus who has been gradually brought to the edge of the divine world and is being assailed by the implacable hatreds of the Titans. So that the human being today has gradually been driven into a mysterious underworld of machines, of physical processes, of discoveries, of nuclear weapons, of all kinds of destructive misuses of the natural resources with which he has been provided. As a result of that, the broken doll really represents man's entire concept of the reason for himself. He is disillusioned. The hopes that he believed to be his natural birthright have faded away. And that which he hoped would become part of a beautiful and wonderful life has been swept out of his reach by ulterior motives and conspiracies. Out of this type of thing, and this type of problem, therefore, it is necessary to more or less go back to Neoplatonism or one of the other classical schools to see what the answer and the reason for all this can possibly be. There has to be a reason for everything. The universe is under laws, and even great Zeus must obey them. Therefore, what is it that is happening that can really make things better for all of us and help us to regain our faith in the beautiful and the good, and become, as the little Dionysus was, a child of heaven, instead of a groping elder person wandering in the darkness of earth? Well, there are lots of things that we can think about in this particular situation. We must realize, and do realize, that things have a meaning. We also realize that the Bible said that there would never be another deluge, that the world would not be destroyed again. This is consoling in the presence of nuclear armament. But there is probably a greater truth underlying some of the older beliefs than we realize or accept today. Today we are disillusioned, sophisticated, and embittered. But beneath the surface of this type of attitude, there are still tremendous hopes, tremendous strengths of belief, that we are still actually in a position to control our own destiny. So we have to begin to see what constituted this world of toys that we have been given. Well, you can read a book on almost any form of life, anthropology, zoology, even all the way down to bacteriology, and find out the number of creatures and the number of things that exist on Earth. Our television programs now often include nature studies in which we become suddenly aware of an incredible diversity of life. And as we sit down and watch this on the screen, perhaps without reasoning about it at the time, we are actually seeing a group of these toys. We are seeing things that are around us that are worth knowing and which most of us have never contacted. So there we begin to see an educational dimension in the forms of life that are gradually being brought to our attention. Then we have all kinds of processes, all the forms of science, medicine, art, literature. We have astronomy and physics. We have every type of tremendous reservoir of potential possibilities. And with a strange negative attitude, we are definitely wasting and casting aside these processes, these wonders, that should be given to us. Our education doesn't make anything wonderful. Education is largely making us accept the inferior meaning of things. It provides only the most literal explanation of everything that happens. It does nothing at all to save the broken doll or mend it or get us a new one. It simply should take away from us, according to its own thinking, the fact that the doll is of any importance at all. These things must go to face the great maturity of, we might almost say, disillusionment. So into the face of this type of thing, it's probably necessary to find out just what kind of a world we are living in. This planet, we are all beginning to realize, is a rather tight-fitting organization. It's getting too small for us every day. We are, however, here. And this planet has the most extraordinary diversity of wonders going on in and around it every moment. It is simply a mass of laws moving into manifestation. It is an immense number of processes, maintaining an infinite diversity of life. Man wanders around in a universe of life, and still he believes in death. He has never been able to really find the clue to the interpretation of the world around him, and he has never been really able to play constructively with the toys of the gods, which are the wonders of natural existence. Yet there are people who are beginning to think more and more about this. They are beginning to want to change the perspective of the person toward his environment. Instead of being a great person in a miserable environment, we are beginning to realize that too many folks these days are little wretched persons in an incredible environment which we have failed to understand. We have not done very much to fill our time with the usefulness that would have brought us a great deal more peace and happiness. Now we sit by the hour in front of a television, watching things that are not true, explained by people who do not understand them, and at the same time taking away step by step what little hope we have left in anything. This we consider to be the proper use. Now let us assume for a moment that the infinite Zeus and his mighty throne decided that television would be an interesting thing for humanity to have. There would be an opportunity to get a great big look at realities. But, as usual, the Titans moved in, and now it is just another instrument of unreality. Yet the potential is there. The printing press is a potential for immediate and inevitable growth. Most of it is now wasted. And people faced with all these things feel that the use of life has been taken away. They feel frustrated, lost, lonely, tired. And the wonderful dreams they had as children, when they really played with these toys correctly, are all gone. And maturity is a great headache, a great area in which we are abusing everything we ever knew or ever had. So we have to begin to think this through, and one of the ways the Greeks did it, certainly, is the Neoplatonists of Alexandria, who were among the best of our mystic thinkers of all time. They realized that we have never divided between materiality and spirituality. We have never seen this universe as anything but a mass of matter. We have never really understood it, except that it is some kind of a molehill floating in space, and that everything that happens, happens here. And every hope we have is centered here. And everything we believe must be according to here, and nothing else. So, as a result of this attitude, as here gets more and more uncomfortable, we become more and more disillusioned. We have not learned to realize that the universe itself is a vast toy, a tremendous wonder in space, with astronomers all around looking through telescopes to try to find out what is inside or behind a black hole. They may find out, but they wonder if it goes on and on and on. We live in a universe of wonders. Children live in that kind of a universe of wonder, but they live it honestly. We are living in a world of wonders, but we are living more or less dishonestly, because we don't even bother to look for the wonders unless we think we can incorporate them in something and make a profit. All of this is tiresome, and it is really affecting human beings more than we realize. We must begin to give the individual some concept of the world of his own childhood, made mature, made real, made adult, but still left beautiful. And there's no reason it cannot be this way. The only reason is that a few ambitious human beings have set up structures which it is difficult for average persons to overcome or correct in their own natures. Actually, we should realize, as the Greeks did, that this world that we are living in now is not a world that we are intended to stay in. This is not the universal fulfillment. This is the little red schoolhouse just outside of one of the ordinary orbits of the planets. Each planet is a schoolhouse of some kind. And here on Earth, we are here for one purpose, and that is to learn something. And if there was nothing to do with the learning after we got it, it is rather reasonable the universe would not have conferred the ability to get it. We are only able to grow because growth is important. We are only able to transcend our own weaknesses because transcendence is important. And transcendence is not measured in the journey from the cradle to the cemetery. So we have here a world that is really an educational toy. That's exactly what it is. It's here for us to learn to be better by having fun, by enjoying the wonders of the natural world, by understanding the larger cosmic purpose, by seeing it working out in the daily experiences of living things. We are not supposed to lose faith in the invisible or the wonderful or the beautiful. We are not supposed to decide in our own minds that the good fairy is a delusion. We are here to find the universal good as it is ours, as it was intended to be, and as it still is, except that our own thinking, imagination, and corruption has destroyed our privilege to see it. We are still working with a world that is beautiful and always will be. If that's true, then where's the trouble? Well, the trouble's largely in ourselves. The individual has not reacted as he might have. He has not learned to grow as he should have. One of the things he should learn from his experience here is that there is a kind of growth dimension with which we all have to cope. We are not here on a line, on a level between the cradle and the grave. We are on an ascending arc. There is some reason why every living thing should in some way be better when it leaves here than when it got here. And today it's apt to be the opposite. But actually, a lifetime is a period of growth. And the universe has set it up so this growth is, for the most part, pleasant and relatively easy. It is man that has made it unpleasant and very difficult. So we have to start in to see what we can do with this world as we find it. One thing we can all remember, as people often say, whether they know about it or not, they wonder why they're here. They say, well, I didn't ask to come, here I am. Well, maybe we did ask to come. Maybe we're where we wanted to be because there was something out there, some new adventure that we wanted to share in. But as body closes in upon our hopes and aspirations, and education dulls them, there is a grave disillusionment. life is no longer the beautiful necessity we have thought about. It becomes a nagging, fatiguing routine. But this is not what it was meant to be, and it is not what it can be if we want to do something about it. The first thing, perhaps, in the most practical level of all, is to realize it's not going to be done for us. The idea that we can all sit back until the golden age arrives and then we'll all be better off is not according to the common sense of the creation plan. Each person is here to grow as an individual. The more difficult the environment, the greater the result if he does grow. The more he overcomes, the stronger he is. The more he drifts along with things as may be considered the easy way, the less he is. So each person has got to solve the world for himself. He's got to restore the golden age in his own heart before he'll ever find it anywhere else. And the golden age is here. It has always been here. And no matter how much gold we've taken out of the earth or how much oil we buy from Saudi Arabia, the golden age is still here. The golden age is this intangible inner life of the individual, something that cannot be destroyed by nuclear fission or anything else. This inner life, which can become anything the individual wants to make it. Now, in religion, we have a great many problems that come up with this type of thing. People are trying to work it out so that by a better believing, they can become better people. Well, this is in a sense true, but it is a dangerous truth we have to think about. How can we become better people first? And how can we become better people continuously under the process of growth? This is the problem we all have to face today. For example, we can say very truly that if we practice certain metaphysical disciplines, if we take on certain teachings, if we believe certain truths, and we read certain books, that we are going to be spiritually improved. This is only an assumption, and the evidence is very largely to the opposite when we get down to it. It is not that study makes us good. It is that goodness makes us good students. The change has to be in the individual, not in the thing he's trying to do. No matter what system he uses, he must use it with the life as he has it now. And if he is the same arrogant, proud, self-centered, conceited individual, or is out desperately hunting for an escape from boredom, there is not going to be any genuine growth anywhere in the studies that he is doing. He has to change himself first. And when he changes himself first, he has taken the first great step towards enlightenment. Enlightenment is not bestowed until it is earned. And it is not earned until the individual has corrected his own mistakes. This type of process is not very enticing. It's never been one of the world's popular beliefs, but it has become gradually recognized as the only truth behind a variety of misunderstandings. The individual has to restore the golden age in his own heart. Now, this is not as hard as it might seem. And while it may not solve everything, it answers a very large group of problems that we all face. There's hardly anyone who hasn't a grievance against somebody. There's hardly anyone who cannot complain that they have had a rough way along the path of life. There are very few people who do not feel that their friends have betrayed them or that children have deserted them. All of these problems are classical. They arise constantly in the relationships of human behavior. But how many of these people stop short in this type of self-pity and ask honestly and sincerely how they helped these people whom they say hurt them? What was the cause of the trouble? We always want to hand it on to another person. If it hadn't been for them, we'd be happy. But in very many cases, they are saying, if it hadn't been for us, they would have been happy. There was lack of common affection, lack of unselfish sharing of life. There were people, each one of whom, looked upon this world as something that they should have a special control over, that they should change other people but remain unchanged themselves, that they should dictate to the lives of perfect strangers sometimes, but woe to anyone who tries to dictate to theirs. The same is true in religion's beliefs and so forth. There are many prejudices that pass as beliefs, and these prejudices are nearly always supported by some kind of selfishness or a kind of selfish ignorance. So we are living in a world that was created as for a race of happy children that has become corrupted and polluted by ourselves. We worry about the problem of pollution. We worry about the smog problem. We worry about the danger of nuclear warfare. We worry about scarcity as a product. We worry about everything, but we do not stop to find out what is the cause of the worry. And the worrier, if he looked carefully, would probably find himself included among those causes. He is causing it himself, but he wants to blame it on someone else. He wants to have everyone financially well-to-do, but he wants to control the finances of a business or something and make it impossible for others to have a reasonable living. All these things have added up to a loss of the great joy of life, the loss of dreams, the loss of hopes. Now, if we consider this material world and the people in it as factual, as something we can't do anything about, if we cannot change the selfish person, if we cannot correct or reform the liar, what are we going to do? Are we going to just simply mope along until death do us part? We hope not. Because regardless of what other people do to us, we can be and must be and should be the keeper of our own destiny throughout life. We can live as well as we want to live, regardless of how other people live. And the better we want to live, the happier we are going to be. And we will discover that this type of attitude also overcomes many of the inhibitions of our environment. We find that people who haven't spoken to us for a long time will speak to us if we have a better attitude toward them. If we begin to forgive other people and chastise only ourselves, we will have a much greater ability to win the regard, reputation, and well-being of other people. So we go to work on this problem a little bit carefully. We want to build back what Mencius called the child heart. Mencius, the great Chinese philosopher, second perhaps only to Confucius, and a very profound student of the Confucian code, was the one that pointed out, beyond all things, that the only human beings that are close to heaven are children. And we find the same thing in the scriptures, where Jesus tells them to let the children come to him, for of them is the kingdom of heaven. We are all children. We only think we've grown up. We couldn't act the way we do if we were grown up. We are simply overgrown children. We are children, and like most children, we can be very cruel. We can be extremely critical. And we can become heartbroken over something our elders will never know when they take the doll away from us. But actually, we are all children. And it's just as wise and just as true to say that people with powerful ambitions are playing with dangerous toys and have not yet grown up to understand the meaning of the very toys they play with. So we start in by taking a universal attitude that we are sophisticated youngsters that have been more or less spoiled by the indulgences of our parents and have failed to recognize the indulgence of the supreme power that put us here, a power that gave us everything necessary to do right, which we have promptly exploited and found various ways of commercializing. So we got to get back now to something that we start over. We may be, have some long white hair or something by the time we get back to childhood. But the idea of a second childhood should not be held as it is today as a symbol of senility. Second childhood is probably our second chance at maturity. We have begun to get away from some of the phonies. The individual who is retired from business and is not feeling too well, but is still able to get around and do things, is in a sense emancipated. He is now capable of doing what he pleases. And if he pleases to do what is right, if he pleases to grow, he becomes again a child learner, out to find out more, out to explore and study, out to enjoy and share and to give. And instead of sitting somewhere on a bench and waiting leave this world, the person should be very active, restoring the child heart. Nearly all of the great teachers of the world have been represented by the heart symbol. The heart doctrine of the Buddha, the heart doctrine of Christianity, the heart doctrine of Hinduism. These are doctrines based finally upon the heart and love. And love is that something which is perverted, is the most terrible and deadly force of all. The corruption of the human basic emotions of life are the most painful and dangerous of all corruptions. They take away from the individual a divine power to survive the stress and shocks of living. Actually, if we can start in as a new group of small children, the first thing we know about children is they ask questions, and usually the parents can't answer them. So I know a number of parents who took courses in various schools in order to answer their children's questions. And, of course, they got the standard answer. And after they'd been to the school, got the answer, and given it to the child knew no more than did before. Because the answer was more childish than the child. The child was a basically straight thinker, and no one could ever straighten out the answer. So the person starting out might probably find it well to say quietly to themselves, I'm like a child, I am ignorant. What I don't know would fill volumes. But I have a clean, open heart. I have an inquiring, questing mind that has not been corrupted or spoiled. Therefore, I am capable of becoming wiser and better. Not by being over-influenced by the way other people are doing things, but working from inside of myself, working in a simple, direct effort to find out the things that one must know to have a good life. And if we can start in that way and kind of go straight along, not being taken to one side or other by taking on family grievances and things of this kind, but always observing and watching to see what happens to who does what, and constantly observing. As we walk along through life, we find a great many toys are educational. And one of the ways of finding this out is to watch other people playing with the same toys and see what happens to them. You can look around pretty generously these days and find that matrimony is a toy that is in serious trouble. People are making every mistake that is possible. in the term of home building. We can't prevent them from making the mistake because they wouldn't care what we said to them in most cases. But we do not need to fail to observe the real facts and tuck that knowledge away against the time when we may need it. And we will not do the things that these other people are doing. Everything that goes wrong is a lesson. Everything that goes right is a lesson. And the learner is inside of ourselves. And we must begin to use this knowledge constructively. These educational games, these toys that we have been given in order that we might grow, reach out beyond the human kingdom into the animal kingdom. They also are among the blades of grass. They are in the oceans and in the sky. Everywhere there are important symbols and things. Things that are puzzles, things that are adventures, things that are matters for observation and reflection. If we begin to use some of our faculties in this way, we will also relieve the mind of this desperate burden of grievances which most folks accumulate during the course of a lifetime. The problem of trying to get through this life without making an enemy is not easy. And it may be that under certain occasions it's practically impossible. But there's a great deal of animosity that could be cured by one kind word, and we will not speak it. Or the other one won't speak it. And gradually we become isolated, wrapped up in little attitudes of our own, as tight as a caterpillar in a cocoon. We just will not let anything come through. Also, by watching carefully this as a child, we can begin to sense that there's something else about the whole business. For it says in the legend of Dionysus that when the little boy was devoured by the giants, that they tried to hide the crime by burning that part of the body which they could not consume. And the smoke of the fire reached Zeus, and he sent a thunderbolt and slew the giants. Then he took the ashes of his little son and the ashes of the Titans who had devoured part of the child, and he fashioned out of this the first human being, who therefore had a body of a Titan and a soul of Dionysus.